Hello and welcome to another episode of the Daily Remedy Podcast. Today we're going to discuss America's abortion obsession, an issue that has begun really since the settlers first came to the continental United States. And really, if the Texas abortion restrictive law is any indication of the issue itself, seems to remain a prominent issue, to say the least, in the minds and eyes of the American public for years to come. So let's begin with how the issue of abortion was first perceived and how that perception has changed over time. And that's critical because understanding the history of abortion in the United States before we were an independent country and during the early decades of this country's history helped to understand how the United States developed the abortion perspective that it currently has. Beginning with the first settlers, most Americans, those who would go on to identify themselves as Americans, European in ancestry, used English law to justify abortions. The English law used a term called quickening. And if none of you have heard this term before, don't be surprised. It's not a medically relevant term, and it was essentially an ad hoc term used to describe the fetal movements a pregnant mother feels. So according to the English law, quickening was the cutoff for an abortion to be legal or illegal. If an abortion took place before the quickening, it was legal. If it took place after the quickening, it was illegal. Now, that sounds a little bit odd because how would a mother know to get an abortion if she doesn't have any symptoms? Well, there are other signs, right? You can see other bodily changes. And if you're not familiar with them, ask somebody who's been pregnant before. A woman always knows. There are certain signs. Now, here's the interesting part. Notice how vague I am being. Oh, always knows. Certain signs. Quickening. Fetal movement. Remember that. Because that vagueness, that inability to articulate specific symptoms and signs of a medical condition or state is part of the problem with why medicine and law really don't seem to get along like we think they would. But let's go back. Let's go back to the issue of quickening. The quickening was a random term created by the English as part of their English common law system to determine the legality of abortions. We co-opted that concept when we brought English law to the United States. And in our Constitution, which is predominantly based off of English law, we adopted the same fundamental premise for abortions. Now, what happened was, in the 1800s, abortions started to become illegal in many states, largely because they were not safe for the mother. Because of the maternal risk abortions provided, they were deemed unsafe procedures medically for the mother and thus restricted by law. Now, flash forward to the late 19th century, during many of the religious revival movements of the country, at a time when alcohol was prohibited, America was trying to find out what its cultural identity would be, and inevitably created a religious sect of government that viewed public policy through the lens of religion, saw abortion not through the lens of the mother, but through the lens of the fetus. And since abortion was already illegal in many states, they justified abortions being illegal out of protection for the life of the fetus. This is a subtle distinction, but it's very critical. Should abortions be viewed from the context of the mother or the context of the fetus? And how should the law apply that context? Previously, it was the mother and the symptoms the mother felt, this quickening symptom. Basically, do you feel the fetus moving in your belly? We're not exactly using medical terms here, I get that. Do you feel the fetus moving? Yes, abortion is illegal. No, abortion is legal. Why wouldn't the mother just say she doesn't feel anything if she wants to get an abortion? And why wouldn't the mother say, I do feel something, if she doesn't want to get the abortion? It's fundamentally subjective. So the legality falls under the subjective perception of the mother and whether the mother can feel the fetus moving. Now, flash forward to the fetus-based perspective on opioids. I mean, abortion. When the perspective shifts to the fetus and whether abortions should be legal or illegal because of the life of the fetus, you're now taking away the subjectivity from the mother and applying that same subjectivity onto society. So now the mother becomes disenfranchised because her right to determine whether an abortion is legal or illegal, morally right or wrong, has now been co-opted by society, who is now making a decision on the legalities of an abortion. Many religious sects would say, we have to protect the life of the fetus. The Bible says every life matters. Even though, interestingly, there is no verse in the Bible that actually mentions abortions or the right to life. It was simply co-opting religious ethos and morality and applying that onto a medical procedure, abortions. So let's review. Abortions are first viewed through a non-medical term called quickening within the English law system. It was then made illegal out of safety concerns for the mother. And since it was illegal, the justification to keep it illegal was based upon the right to live on the fetus, using religious and moralizations to restrict a medical procedure. So you see the shift that's taking place. But consistent around the shift is this trend of taking medical context, medical terminology, reapplying it within the legal world, or changing the frame of reference by which you look at an issue. Now let's get into the early 20th century. In the early 20th century, the issue of abortions started to begin under debate much more rapidly than in previous decades. You can attribute that to the women empowerment movement. You can attribute that to a more learned America. Many reasons, but abortions were more heavily debated in the early 20th century than they were before. Now there were legitimate proponents and opponents against the issue of abortion that would go out and debate it and have strong, passionate sides that they would express. As a result, many states faced the issue of abortions and had to decide in their own state legislative bodies whether they wanted to legalize abortions or restrict the legalization of abortions. Colorado was the first state to legalize abortions, and they did so under the safety concerns of the mother. So now you see a shift going back from the perspective of the fetus to the perspective of the mother. And under that context, Colorado decided to legalize abortions. Well, all of this came to a head in 1973 with, as most of you would know, the famous case of Roe v. Wade. There was also another case called Doe v. Bolton that overturned a restrictive abortion law in Georgia. But both laws, both cases, rather, applied the law in similar ways. Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton used a term called substantive due process to justify legalizing abortion. Substantive due process is a very vague and abstract term. It's really not well understood outside of the most studied constitutional scholars. And the term is essentially that the law has to permit certain enumerated rights among the public. Enumerated means implicit, implied laws. In other words, the government has to permit laws that it doesn't explicitly define because they are enumerated. So something is legal because, well, it's legal. And something is illegal because, well, it's illegal. So the logic is circular, but it's vague and abstract and poorly defined. And I think that's by intention. The law really struggles to understand the legality of medical procedure without imposing a certain moral tint. But the moment you impose a moral tint onto the law no longer becomes objective. So it's this catch-22 the law finds itself in trying to balance just the right amount of morality and just the right amount of appropriate medical terminology and medically sound principles to make the law a law without being excessively subjective. And as you can tell in the history of abortions, back from quickening with the English law, we really have not done a good job with that. And what we really need to do is understand three key components. One, how to adopt medical terms and medical terminology into law. Two, how equal protection under the law, the 14th Amendment, applies to healthcare law. And three, really understanding what substantive due process in healthcare actually means, and not simply sidestepping the issue through vague, obscure terminology. So let's go to the first term, medical terms in law. When we talked about quickening at the beginning of this podcast, we kind of mentioned it in jest a little bit, and I mentioned the fetus in the mother's belly. Quickening is not a medically sound term. It's simply describing movement in the fetus. To state that life begins with movement or the perception of movement in the fetus is really just applying an arbitrary notion to when life begins. The same issue can apply with this recent Texas abortion law, fetal heart rate. Fetal heart rate has never been used to determine the start or the genesis, to use a biblical term, of life. Fetal heart rate, as we understand it, is really the specialization of embryonic cells into cardiac cells that start to pulsate because that's what heart cells do. The heart pumps blood in the body. To then use that as now the determining factor for the start of life is taking a medical term outside of its appropriate medical context. Fetal heart rate has never been used to determine the start of life. It has been used to determine whether a mother who is in labor should continue a natural pregnancy or undergo a C-section. It has been used to assess the health of the fetus in the third trimester and to determine if there are certain placental abnormalities at the end of the second trimester, but it has never been used to determine the start of life. We are simply taking a medical term and recontextualizing it, quickening for the 21st century. This is very similar to other laws and how they are applied. For example, in Kentucky, there's what's called a narrated ultrasound. It states that in order for an abortion to be legal, the abortion provider must undergo a narrated ultrasound to the mother. Basically, the mother must watch a video of the fetus in action while the physician performing the abortion explains what the mother is seeing. Only then is the abortion legal. And it's kind of a cruel thing to do to a mother who decides to get an abortion. Take a look at your fetus. This is the fetus that you are no longer wanting, that you are aborting. How do you feel? And it's a little odd that that would be the basis to determine legality. It's almost as though in order for a mother to understand why she needs an abortion, she has to see her fetus move and understand the anatomy of that movement. Never mind the social or economic concerns a mother may have. No, it's the anatomy of the fetus. It's a little ridiculous when you break it down into that level of granular context, but that is essentially how medical terminology and medical terms are applied into the legal context. It then changes the perspective from being mother-focused to fetus-focused. And that issue goes into the second term, which is equal protection under the law. It states that there must be a distribution of burdens that should be applied across society equally. That no one person or individual should be forced to face the burden of a problem that should be distributed across society. Essentially, it's saying that you can't just target one person. Everybody has to be treated equally. Well, for abortions, we tend to look at from the mother's perspective or from the fetus perspective. We have very little in the way of looking at it from both perspectives. Now, that's kind of an odd thing to say because we often look at abortions as a zero-term issue. Either the fetus goes or the fetus stays. We look at it in a very transactional manner. But really, abortion should be looked at as a long-term decision made by the mother. Often mothers make decisions to undergo abortions because they are not financially or economically suited to raise a child. And they realize that a child would place a burden on the mother and would prevent the mother from treating the child the best way possible in raising him or her. So we have these issues of distribution of burdens that really comes down to how do we balance and make society most fair for mothers who are in the situation for getting abortion or not. And I think it really comes down to empowering women to understand the short-term and long-term implications of their decisions. Then again, women have a right to choose. They have a right to choose to do what they want with their body, and they have a right to choose what medical procedures they undergo. How do you balance the social responsibility that mothers have to their fetus relative to the autonomy each individual enjoys given the rights enumerated among all Americans? That's a complex issue. And I think that it's an issue worth having discussions on because that's really the heart of what is a fair abortion law. How do we balance the burdens of the mother relative to the burdens of raising the fetus throughout childhood? That then leads to the third term, substantive due process. And if you notice, over the past few minutes, I've been getting more and more vague. Because the more objectively or fairly you try to look at the issue of abortion, the more abstract and obscure you become. It's very easy to create an abortion law that restricts the legality of abortion based off of quickening, fetal heart rate, narrative ultrasound, very concrete terms, very concrete actions that define clearly what's legal and what's not. It's a little bit more difficult to identify a law that's actually fair. It's very difficult to explain a law that would balance the burdens of the fetus and of the mother and of society as a whole using medical terminology as it is appropriately used within a medical context. It becomes more abstract. It becomes more obscure. And that is the flaw between medicine and law. The more fair and objective you go in making laws around healthcare conditions and treatments, the more complex and obscure the law becomes. There's a fundamental contradiction there. And in order to address that contradiction, we have to understand more about the medicine, ensure we're using medical terminology in the appropriate manner, so that when we create laws around healthcare issues, we're trying to be as fair as our current understanding of healthcare allows us to be, and create laws that meet the burdens and distribution thereof in a more fair way, in a manner that respects our enumerated implied rights, our rights to privacy, our rights to autonomy, while being medically responsible. That's a difficult task. And it requires a lot of diligence and a lot of insight into the underlying healthcare issues. Unfortunately, politicians are not willing to look at abortion in that manner. So instead, we get restrictive laws that really don't seem to have any medical basis. And then we have the political pandering and the mass hysteria from society. It seems that's the lowest common denominator when it comes to the issue of abortion. And it seems that's where we are destined to remain because we don't have the ability to look at the issues of abortion as it should be looked at. Take care.